November 1st, 2022, Ward Green here, 12:39 hours. I looked up Radium Girls, and I didn't know they were going to be called Radium Girls, but on Wikipedia, there's an entry called Radium Girls. When I looked up the radium thing, the issue with radium that people had, let's find out what I looked up. You can see. Radium poisoning. I looked up radium poisoning. I found this article, and it's terrible. These girls were told to do this by their employer, who had hired them to paint the radium dials, and they painted the radium dials, and they used this radioactive paint, and the paint was dangerous. And even though the person who was in charge was not necessarily aware of the danger, but this is a person who wasn't willing to do it himself, but he was telling the women to dab the paintbrush on their tongues or on their lips to make a very sharp point on the brush so that they could paint the radium dial. And this is what happened, was they got deathly ill. In 1923, the first dial painter died, the first death, that is, from this activity. And before her death, her jaw fell away from her skull. It's so horrific. 50 women were ill by 1924, and a dozen had died. So they didn't even live long enough to get cancer, apparently. I mean, they were just dying from their bodies falling apart. There was dental pain, loose teeth, lesions, ulcers, all kinds of things. And apparently, and the women later got anemia, bone fractures, necrosis. So let's not even continue with it. So it's horrific. They got sterility. They were made sterile, even. It's so terrible what happened to these women. It just shows you can get sick. Very sick from radioactive elements like radium. So the idea, I would not eat a spoonful of plutonium because it's very dangerous. You might survive it because it might go through your body fast enough that it doesn't kill you, but even if you survive it, you might be very severely damaged by it. So you wouldn't eat a spoonful of plutonium. Even if you might survive, you wouldn't do it. That's what this clearly indicates here. But you know, I was mentioning in a previous video, if you breathe plutonium, it's really even more dangerous as far as compared to eating it. But these women were not even eating this radium. They were just dabbing it on their lips or on their tongue. Look at this. Because the true nature of the radium had been kept from them, the radium girls painted their nails, teeth, and faces for fun with the deadly paint. Because it made them glow in the dark, I guess. So it's terribly sad. It's horrible. It's more than terribly sad. It's horrific. Anyway, that was the story of the radium girls. I have a very short or a very unrelated, possibly, experience to share about when I worked, and this one shocks me, I want to talk about my own discovery about vitamin K2, which is now I have no arthritis in my fingers that I can see, or my thumbs, where I did have at least one bump that was red, inflammation that was swelling in the joint that was clearly the beginning of something that I certainly do believe it was arthritis and probably rheumatoid arthritis, but I just don't have these issues with my joints at the moment. But that's because I believe I reversed the rheumatoid arthritis by using vitamin K2. I believe I reversed it. And of course, I'm taking calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, and vitamin K2, and other vitamins as well, like vitamin B12 and so on. But it may not be quite as simple as K2, but I think K2 is, I think it possibly is that simple, that vitamin K2 is the cure for arthritis. That's what I believe. But the experience that I wanted to relate, and I've had a problem with my iMac this morning, it didn't boot up. So I'm investigating what to do about that. But I found out already that it's the internal drive, it's the boot drive, which is an external, it's an external drive, but it's the drive that is being used to boot. It's internal to the dock. That drive is not being, it's not working, apparently. So I've got to do some kind of recovery on the drive if I can and see what happens. But it's good news. The good news is I thought my iMac wasn't booting, and it is booting fine. It's just that the drive from which it was booting is the problem. So because it was seeming like it wanted to boot just fine. It doesn't seem like the iMac's gone. At first I couldn't boot the iMac. It did nothing. Nothing at all. Which is potentially very bad news, right? But anyway, because it could mean I can't. Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts going through my mind right now. None of which are very good, because I'm a little worried about my iMac, but it's not like I need it, but I'm running it. I'm using it to run things. Some of my older Windows programs, which if the iMac eventually quits, then I can maybe switch to running Windows some other way, so it's possible. I shouldn't be worried about it, but anyway, I guess I shouldn't worry. But the experience I wanted to relate about me working in the physics labs I didn't work in the physics labs except when I was a graduate student, when I was doing my master's degree, where I'm not sure if we were required. I can't remember if it was a requirement, but it was a way of earning money. We could work as instructors in the labs, in the physics labs. And we also would sometimes give tutorials. So I was working in the physics labs, and one of the professors said something that really shocked me at the beginning of the lab, when the pre-med students take their physics labs. You know, they have to take physics as a requirement of pre-med, and when they do their lab course, or when they come in for the class, you know, they do physics labs. You know, they do lab experiments in the physics lab, and the introduction that was given by the professor who was in charge at that time was, he told them that they shouldn't think they were going to make any discoveries of any new science, or that they would make no significant discoveries during these physics labs. So he told them point blank there was no possibility that they would make any discoveries, which it mortified me. It mortified me that he would say that, because it would be a big letdown for them to it would just take away a lot of the, I mean, surely none of them expected to make discoveries in physics, or even if they did. There was no reason to tell them that they weren't going to, you know, it seemed to me. maybe it would bring them down to earth, you know, or humble them somehow, but it was not going to be, it would also cause them, you know, to feel a lot less positive about that experience. So I really thought that was a regrettable thing that he said. But the reason I mention it is because I feel like I've made a discovery here with vitamin K2 that's very significant, that is huge, that it cures arthritis. And the other evidence is manifold. I mean, it's many fold, because my health is improving in other ways where I, you know, my arthritis in my joints of my hips, I mean, is my knees and hips. I mean, I'm younger. When I walk and run, I've gained back some of that youth that I had before. Now, at this present time, I mean, now, I am 65 years old. I had been probably aging normally when I was 35 years old, which was, that would be about 92, right? In 1992. I didn't start taking calcium until I was maybe 42, I guess, something like that. In 1999 or 2000 or somewhere around there, I started taking calcium. And calcium did help me a lot at the beginning, but I didn't know about vitamin K2 at that time. And vitamin K2, because I didn't know about it, and the calcium that I did take as a supplement may have accelerated the onset of arthritis too. It's possible, very possible. But I didn't know about K2, and as soon as I learned, I was starting to get arthritis. What year that was, I don't know, actually, but quite a long time after I started taking calcium, maybe 10 years after, or so maybe it was 2010. I'm guessing that. That's just a very rough number, approximate figure, or date, I should say. So 2010, I may have started taking K2 sometime around there. And my arthritis that was beginning to, its onset was beginning at that time, but it was coming to the winter, the approach of winter at that time. Even though the arthritis was starting at the time when the sun was going south for the winter, I still experienced complete remission of arthritis as soon as I started taking vitamin K2. And I kept taking calcium with it, put the K2 and the calcium together, the vitamin D, all that I kept taking, but I added the K2 to the regime, and it apparently caused, but we don't know for sure. We never know for sure, but I experienced a complete remission from arthritis. And then recently I've noticed when I did have pain in my joints, the taking of K2 caused instantaneous relief from the pain. And that absence of pain or that relief persisted. So I'm finding I can take, and also there's no apparent toxicity of vitamin K2. There's no known toxicity, none, that anyone knows about for vitamin K2 that I'm aware of. As soon as I'm aware of it, I'll let people know. But there's no known toxicity for vitamin K2, which is not true of any other substance that I know of, that you can say there's no known toxicity for that substance. Even pure water, which is generally thought to be healthy, right? We drink water. But if you drink too much water, we need water for hydration, but if you drink too much water all at once, you die because it's toxic at a certain level. Well, there's no known toxic level for vitamin K2. It's a very important concept, but what the significance of that is, I don't really know. Of course, it's very complex. Of how the body works is complex. We don't know why that would be or what anything more. There's nothing more to add to that, except I can take, in my case, a fairly large amount, or, you know, 12 or more vitamin K2 caplets, I mean gel caps, in one day without any adverse effects. In fact, you don't really notice the effect, except you won't have any, or I don't have any arthritics symptoms or any, you know, I don't, it apparently reverses arthritis, and it's apparently causing benefits, but it doesn't feel like it, there's no euphoria, you know, there's no, I don't feel a sudden surge in energy when I take K2, or it's not sudden, but there's no sudden effect of taking K2, but there's no known side effect in a negative way. There's no, and there's no known toxicity to any, no one knows of any toxicity for vitamin K2. And it apparently is benefiting me in quite significant ways. I think it's, well, it's obviously going to increase my activity level if I have no pain in my joints. That obviously increases my ability to run around and do things. And everything is increased in terms of activity when you don't have arthritis. You know, it's quite simple. But I honestly believe it probably is having a much more radical effect on all my overall health, for the better, possibly. But, you know, who knows? But very possibly, and I think, I would say probably, I would say definitely if I could, but you can't be definite. I think it's as close to definite as you can get without saying definite, because you can never really say definite. But that's my report. So, I mean, I don't think you should let anyone tell you you're not going to make discoveries, is what I'm saying now, what I believe has always been true, of course. It's always been true. Don't let anyone tell you you're not going to make discoveries. But I also don't think that doctors should be experimenting on their patients either. Without consent of their patients, I don't think that doctors should try to do that. Even if they think they know better than their patients, it's only the patients who do have the right to. And to have control. Only the patients have the right to control what happens to their bodies. And I'm not saying patients should experiment with their bodies. I'm saying with education, yeah. Patients, they need to do very, very careful, educated experiments with their bodies. That's what I'm saying. Not just wild experimentation. But if and when they get the education they need to understand enough about what the risks are or what the potential risks are of taking a certain vitamin, then they can begin a very careful experiment with that vitamin. But it's a long, long time period over which the experiment needs to be done. It can't be done, you know, it's not a one-day experiment or 2 days or whatever. I mean, if you get a bad reaction, it's a very short experiment. You're not going to do that experiment again until you're almost certain that you're not going to get any bad reaction from it, right? So that's... But it's very complex, so we need to figure out this question about how do you choose is a good question, because it could refer to many different things. Including how do you choose what vitamin to use if you think you need vitamins, or how do you choose? Well, and it can apply to how do you choose which religion, you know, all sorts of things it can apply to. But I think with vitamins, how do you choose which vitamin is? You take your time first of all trying to figure out. But you also listen to Jehovah and the information coming at you from other people. But somebody said to me recently, you know, everyone's telling me, the media or whoever it was, they didn't say who was telling them, but they were hearing people say, you need to get sunshine. You need sunshine, you know. So this person was going out and outside, I guess, because of that, because they believed you need sunshine, because they were told they needed sunshine. I'm getting a light reflection from my heater. I'm going to turn the heater off. I mean, that might be true, you need sunshine, but I think it's very dangerous to take advice from the public media or the public forums or the media. It's bad to get advice from those people or from the mass media. I mean, it's a bad idea because it might be right in some sense where there is a benefit to sunshine, but they don't know what they're not at the time they're spreading that information. They almost invariably don't know what the dangers are of that or what the other side of the story is, right? It's the same thing with, you have to hear both sides of the story. Like with, I was talking about the Viberg boots. Someone would say something negative about them, but then if we haven't heard from Viberg and what their version of the story is, then we're not being objective, right? We need both sides of the story in every story. In every case, we always need both sides of the story before we can really make a decision. But the problem with the media spreading information is we're not going to hear both sides of the story because they don't know the story. All they know is, well, they know that story. They just don't know both sides of it. Like, what are the side effects of having too much sun? Or what does sunshine do? Maybe, like, I mean, one thought I had was all these people who work in the sun all day, the sunshine is a very destructive thing, right? I mean, it destroys, the ultraviolet light destroys things. It gives you skin cancer. It destroys all sorts of plastics and everything to just dissolve in the sun. Knowing that, like, ropes can become break, they can break because of the sun, they're exposed to the sun. Ultraviolet light can destroy a lot of synthetic materials, right? But it can destroy, and it changes the color of wood. So it essentially destroys the wood eventually, and it's destroying a lot of things. It just can't penetrate deeply enough into the wood, perhaps, to destroy a very thick piece of wood. But it's destructive, and it's possible the sunshine may be speeding up our metabolisms, or whoever's out in the sun, it's possible their metabolism may speed up and they may die younger. And that's just a theory that I have, but I think it's probably on the right track of what the truth is, but I don't know for sure. I think that you need, I think that's if you get too much sun. I'm not sure if staying indoors all the time is going to make you live a longer life or a healthier life. I think that's almost certainly not true, but yeah, because we don't. I think we need some sunshine. We were created to live in the sun, but we're not plants. We don't need sun. We're not like plants. The leaves of which need. Maybe we should say the leaves of whom need light in order to survive and grow and thrive, all these things. We're not like plants. We don't need sunshine in that way. So it's something to be very aware of. How much sun should you get? And you shouldn't base it on what other people say. That's the problem, because none of these people who are telling you to get sunshine, none of them know what they're saying. None of them know that's the best thing to do at all. Okay, so anyway, that's the end of that topic, I think. But what is the best way is not going to be arrived at by listening to somebody who doesn't know the best way. But the other aspect is fear is not a good source of information. Like if you're thinking, I'm going to get sick if I don't get sunshine, therefore you overreact and try to get sunshine all the time. The fear is not the right motivator. You need to be motivated from love, out of love. Love for your body. You love your own body. You say, I'm not going to go out in the sun because I know it's going to hurt me to be in the sun. But I will go out in the sun maybe when the sun is not so deadly, like later in the day perhaps, or whatever, you know, things like that. or early in the morning. But if you go out early in the morning, there's a danger you're going to be out all day long. So I prefer later in the day because I know it's limited by the darkness of nighttime. That's going to arrive. That's going to come. And that will stop the exposure to sun when after the sun sets. So anyway, maybe we should do our study. We've got a lot to do today. But it's very interesting, the different things that I want to talk about my Danner boots, though. How did I choose Danner? Because I said I didn't know, but of course I do know a lot about how I chose Danner. And nothing is really random, because everything we do, even our subconscious is involved, and it's not random. So there's no real random choices that we make, even if it's personal preference, it's not really random. But what I meant was, the uncertain part would be our subconscious. We don't know what's in our subconscious. So if we decide based on our subconscious without knowing why we're choosing, then we might have regrets. That's the problem. Whereas if we choose based on logic, oh, I had a great thought about logic. Yeah, if you always do something for a reason, I was saying yesterday, right? If you always base everything on reason, then you can believe in God, because God is the one who created logic. He created the logos, which is the word logic. And that is, therefore, if you believe in reason and logic, you have to believe in God, because God created logic. It's a necessity. So you need to stick to logic if you want to believe in God. You can't use random ideas, or you can't claim that there is such a thing as randomness and still believe in God. Just they're not compatible. There's no such thing as random anyway. Even people who write the programs for random number generators admit that. They know, even, my mentor, J.R. Johnson, Dr. J.R. Johnson, actually, if we want to get technical, he was a PhD, from Atomic Energy, who trained me in the physics that he was doing in the medical health department of Atomic Energy at Chalk River. He taught me there's no such thing as random. He taught me that. And he was a physicist who used random number generators. That's how he knew there was no such thing as random. So anyway, fascinating stuff. But my Danner boots, I didn't choose them randomly. I started with a search of what are the best work boots, and that's when I found Danner came up at the top of the list. The top rated work boot was Danner, a Danner boot. Now, I didn't end up buying a work boot. I bought a Danner hiking boot. But I also want to talk about how boots fit. It's not just the bottom of your foot, obviously, right? Your toes. Somebody mentioned corns yesterday. I know that you don't want, it's true, you do have to have the toes and the top of your foot fit in the shoe, in the boot. You can't crowd the toes it's not a good idea to crowd your toes. And you don't want to have the top of the boot pushing down on your feet. Not much, you know, or I don't think, it has to somewhat, because you have to keep the foot from slipping, but you don't want your toes to be crushed from the top. It's good to have some space in the toes, at least possibly, let's say. Now, maybe every shoe is different, right? Some shoes, well, you have to keep that in mind. If it doesn't feel comfortable to wear it, it's probably not going to be comfortable in the long run, or it won't be healthy for your feet. But the bottom of the foot was the part that I mentioned yesterday. That's where you have to get your arch fitting in the shoe comfortably in the bottom of the foot, where it feels like when you're walking, you have a good cushion and your foot is supported. That's the most important thing, provided you don't have crowding in the toes and you've got comfort on top. The foot should feel comfortable everywhere, including the top of the foot. When you're wearing the shoe, it should feel comfortable on top. But it should also feel comfortable on the bottom of the foot. When I first got the Danners, I could feel there was no real arch support, and I would have been able to wear them, but they weren't going to be the most, you know, the best boot I ever wore. And maybe they were going to create problems later on if I wore them a lot, which I may not do anyway, because I'm not always working with work boots on. So I work with sandals, I work with all kinds of footwear. I don't always wear full grain leather work boots when I'm working, so I don't have to worry about that from that point of view. But I love having shoes that fit really well and that are a pleasure to wear, and that's what I think shoes should be. So when I ordered the Danners, I'm concerned with it being one of the best boots according to a lot of independent reviews. The other thing, and that's what convinced me, was that it came up at the top of one particular independent review of the best work boots for 2022, probably something like that. In a recent year, they were the best, according to some review. So then I looked at what they did, and I found out more about Danner, and that they use only Vibram soles. That's the only sole they use on all of their boots is Vibram. And that told me they must be good as a company, because Vibram soles, I knew a little bit about. I knew a little bit, enough to know that Vibram was thought of as a very good sole for a boot or a shoe. Very, very good traction, very safe. If you're going to be doing any walking on slippery surfaces, Vibram is... I've already talked about Vibram, so I don't need to go into that. Vibram's good. The Merrells I was getting, they had a Vibram sole too, so that was another reason I was interested in getting two, both of them having Vibram, because that would simplify my life a bit too, if they both had the same. So that's another way to choose, is you can choose so as to simplify your life a little bit too, by getting all your shoes with the same type of sole on them. But I wouldn't do it for me. Wouldn't do it for all my shoes necessarily, because that would be too big a risk. Then what if all of those soles turn out to be bad? But, you know, you can see where I'm going with that. So, but you can simplify your life a little bit by duplication sometimes. So I liked the Danner because they had the Vibram sole. And I liked the full grain leather. I liked that they weren't too expensive. And I liked the positive ratings. Some people said the hiking boots that I ordered, which were Danner, some people said they were the best boots they'd ever worn. So I use personal reviews. That really guides me. When I can find one person who gives a glowing review about something, that's more what influences me. Like when I bought my Acer monitors, I have two of them. I bought these two monitors, the ultra-wide monitors, the Acers. I bought them based on one review by one person who said it was the best monitor they'd ever used or something like that. It gave a glowing review. Somebody who'd obviously used other monitors, who knew what he was talking about, gave it a fantastic review. So, let's dim that down. So, maybe that shouldn't be dim. Maybe I'll have a better image if I keep it bright. Okay. But, coming back to that, I do use personal reviews when it's a very intense and believable review that somebody gives that says, I love this product, it's the best product I've ever used, then in that particular field, you know, it's the best monitor, the best pair of shoes, whatever. I use that, okay? If I believe it, I will use that to sway me, because there's no, you rarely get that. You rarely get any information like that where you can say, well, here's an actual testimony of somebody. Here's the testimony of somebody who's convinced it's a good product. No, you won't find that. I believe on you won't find it for every product you buy. You just don't get that. And even if you get a glowing review, somebody says it's great, it may not be a very believable. I was going to say it may not be a believable review, but then I have to define what I mean by believable. But it may not be worded in such a way that you believe the person knows what they're talking about, or it just may not convince you. It depends on the wording and everything about that review that helps you decide whether it's believable. But when I believe something, that can be enough that, you know, assuming all the other things are okay, like all the other reviews are all right, and plus you've got the price is right, etc. You know, you've got all the things. The Acer company, I bought a laptop from them, so I was being brand loyal when I bought those. I hadn't bought from Acer since then, but and that laptop wasn't the best laptop ever, but it didn't cause me, it wasn't so bad that I thought I'll never buy from them again. The fact that I'm having trouble, or that I had trouble with the hard drive, internal hard drive of the iMac, that doesn't stop me from buying from Apple. Because they didn't manufacture that hard drive, for one thing. But, yeah, it's some kind of, some other manufacturer. In fact, it's a Seagate. It's a Seagate hard drive, I believe. And I bought from Seagate, even though Seagate made defective hard drives. Like, I'm running two Seagate hard drives right now. Listen to the noise. That's the iMac. It's wanting me to look. Let me look at it. Gave an error. It said dash 2002F. I don't know why. I'm going to write that down. Dash 2002F. Okay. So that's my iMac. So the iMac itself may have problems, but it seemed to be booting normally. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not going to start talking. I hopefully won't start talking about that right now. But the Danner boots. It's real leather, so it's not going to. It's going to have a break-in period also. But I definitely got some idea that from that person who said that those hiking boots were the best ones he'd ever owned. That told me it's a good risk. I'll take a risk on that. You know, that I can take a risk, and probably I won't be. There'll probably be a way to make them work. That's what I thought. So I didn't want to buy them too small. So I decided, because that would be possibly a danger. That I wouldn't, but if they're a bit too large, just a little too large, that might work, because I knew I could use insoles, you know, to fill in some of the space. But you want to have some room above your toes, so you generally can't just add insoles, which lift your foot up, because you need room in the toes. So they have to be a boot that has room enough in the toes that can enable you to add insoles. Or either that, or you have to add. You can still do it if you add insoles that are only 3/4 length insoles that aren't full length. You know, that aren't full length insoles. You add the shorter insole into the boot, and they don't go all the way to the toe, so that you're not taking up space that your toes need to occupy in the boot. But that's why I'm saying you need. It's good, you need to really, but it's good to have all different kinds of insoles that you keep around the house, that you have them available in case you want to make those adjustments to your boots, the necessary adjustments when you first buy them. You don't want to wait till later. You want to start right away making the adjustments that make the boots fit properly. And then you can still adjust them later too, but anyway, time will tell, though, on whether it appears like I can make both of the pairs of boots work. The Danner didn't fit as well as the Merrells because they were too big, and the bottom, they didn't have as good an arch support. The Merrells feel good, like they felt good. Even the arch support of the Merrells were fine, like they were good. So maybe I should not have bought the Danners. Maybe I should have tried to buy more of the Merrells. Right, it's possible. But now I've bought the Danners. I didn't think that, maybe I didn't know of Merrells making, yeah, Merrells do make leather. I guess I didn't believe in Merrill's all that much. That's what it was. I don't know why I didn't believe in them all that much. My old boots that I wore that were Merrill's were great. It's just that they were, they wore out, basically. I wore out the soles through the way I walk. I wore the soles so that the outside of the shoe got worn down on both shoes so that I was walking like this, but that's because that's the way my legs are. When I walk, I don't walk like this. That has nothing to do with flat feet. Flat feet has to do with the arch, or flat, arched or flat. This is not to do with flat feet, but it's got to do with pronation or supination. I got to show you. Pronation. Pronation is where your feet turn inward, like that. And supination is where they tip inwards. They tip outwards is called supination. Mine tip outwards, so the bottom of the outer part of my shoes got worn away on the Merrells. So that my feet are like that, but the shoes look like that. If you know what I mean. Anyway, but that's not the same as flat feet, where the arch is like that and the flat is like that. You know, arched and flat. Anyway, that's with the feet pointing toward you. So let's do our study. There's a lot to learn about feet and shoes that I can't cover everything, I guess, but I wish I could, because I guess my physics training has allowed me to learn a lot of things in more depth, even from things I learned years ago. I can look at it and analyze it from the point of view of a physics experiment or something like that, where I'm studying things. It's not just that, I guess. It's logic. It's got to do with logic. The belief in Jesus Christ, I believe, gives a lot of logic, brings a lot of logic to the table, to the arena, or whatever. Brings a lot of logic into play, because he is the Logos. And that's from God's word itself. That's the source of that information. Okay, this is God's word, Psalm 31. Jehovah, please bless us. Please help us be attentive and humble when we learn your word, and not be trying to put our own meaning upon it, but allow us to absorb it in the way that it was originally intended to be understood, even though it be a translation and not the original languages. And we say this, we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. So, to the director, a melody of David, little children, a psalm of David, a melody of David. Psalm 31. In you, O Jehovah, have I taken refuge. Oh, may I never be ashamed. In your righteousness, provide escape for me. Incline to me your ear. Deliver me speedily. Become for me a rocky stronghold, a house of strongholds to save me. For you are my crag and my stronghold. And for the sake of your name, you will lead me and conduct me. You will bring me out of the net that they have hidden for me, for you are my fortress. Into your hand I entrust my spirit. You have redeemed me, O Jehovah, the God of truth. I do hate those paying regard to worthless, vain idols. But as for me, in Jehovah I do trust. I will be joyful and rejoice in your loving kindness, in that you have seen my affliction, you have known about the distresses of my soul, and you have not surrendered me into the hand of the enemy. You have made my feet stand in a roomy place. Show me favor, O Jehovah, for I am in sore straits. With vexation my eye has become weak, my soul and my belly, for with grief my life has come to an end, and my years in sighing. Because of my error, my power has stumbled, and my very bones have become weak. From the standpoint of all those showing hostility to me, I have become a reproach, and to my neighbors, very much so, and a dread to my acquaintances. When seeing me out of doors, they have fled from me, like someone dead, and not in the heart. I have been forgotten. I have become like a damaged vessel. For I have heard the bad report by many, fright being on all sides, when they mass together as one against me. It is to take away my soul that they do scheme. But I, in you, I have put my trust, O Jehovah. I have said, you are my God. My times are in your hand. Deliver me from the hand of my enemies and from those pursuing me. Do cause your face to shine upon your servant. Save me in your loving kindness. O Jehovah, may I not be ashamed, for I have called on you. May the wicked ones be ashamed. May they keep silent in Sheol. May false lips become speechless that are speaking against the righteous one, unrestrainedly in haughtiness and contempt. How abundant your goodness is, which you have treasured up for those fearing you, which you have rendered to those taking refuge in you in front of the sons of men. You will conceal them in the secret place of your person from the banding together of men. You will hide them in your booth from the quarreling of tongues. Blessed be Jehovah, for he has rendered wonderful loving kindness to me in a city under stress. As for me, I said when I became panicky, I shall certainly be exterminated from in front of your eyes. Surely you have heard the voice of my entreaties when I cried to you for help. Oh, love Jehovah, all you loyal ones of his, the faithful ones Jehovah is safeguarding, but he is rewarding exceedingly anyone showing haughtiness. Be courageous and may your heart be strong, all you who are waiting for Jehovah. That's Psalm 31. And there's a couple of interesting things in there. Well, there are quite a few interesting things, but some that stood out to me. Well, the idea of the neighbors being in fear or avoiding, the neighbors avoiding David because they fled from him. The neighbors fleeing even from him when they saw him out of doors. They fled from him when they saw him. That was verse 11. But all those showing hostility to David, to them, he had become a reproach, it says there. So perhaps his neighbors were showing some hostility toward him as well. Certainly in that sense that they fled from him. Or his acquaintances too. Not just his neighbors. Verse 11. All of that is in verse 11. Then we have something. Remember, there was something Jesus said when he was on the cross. Into your hand, verse 5. I entrust my spirit. Jehovah said something about that, about entrusting his spirit. That was so touching. Jesus was dying when he said those words. Jesus called with a loud voice, Luke 23, Father, into your hands I entrust my spirit. Luke 23 and 46. Those words are very sad to me right now, because I feel empathy for the death of Christ. At this moment, I'm feeling that. It's sad to think that Christ died on the cross, but even though we know, Christians know that he died for a purpose, to provide the ransom, to serve as the ransom for all of mankind. It's still very sad because he was innocent person. He was also perfect. He was a perfect man, an innocent man, who was dying for that purpose. So it's very sad to read those words, "Into your hand I entrust my spirit." It's so sad. And when my wife died, at the time I was very much incapable of feeling these feelings that I'm feeling now, because I was in shock and I was still in adrenaline mode, at the time. But "Into your hand I entrust my spirit." The fact that my wife was dying, I felt a lot of grief between then and now. I have felt a lot of grief, but I wasn't able to really slow down and stop and think how it must have been for her, like what it must have been like for her, how sad it must have been for her. I knew it was sad even when she began to get sick. I knew it was sad. I was well aware how sad it was. And I could feel that it was time. She was getting older. She was dying of old age, of course. And this was going to arrive no matter what we did. I knew that this would happen no matter what we did. And I knew that just running to the doctors wouldn't be the answer. It just wasn't one of those things, it wasn't one of those situations where you run to the doctor. I'm not sure since then I've learned a lot more about health, and I'm now believing there's even fewer reasons to run to the doctor than I believed back then. But I mean, because there are ways to treat illness that are, I mean, there's almost no reason to run to a doctor. Almost no reason, because I now believe that, well, for one thing, if you're taking vitamins and you go to the hospital, they'll take away all your vitamins. They won't let you take any of your vitamins because they don't want to be responsible for what happens to you in the hospital when you're taking vitamins. They won't let you take vitamins. I'm almost certain of that. They won't let you have your vitamins even if you need them. So you don't want to go to the hospital at all for that reason. Certainly not once you know what vitamins you need and how to use the vitamins. You don't want to be in the hospital at all. So my situation has changed even more, far more. I mean, it's developed or changed. I've become more knowledgeable, far more knowledgeable since my wife's passing from old age and from the failure of her bodily functions due to old age that she was suffering at the age of her early 90s, but she died at the age of 92. That's right, not 82, 92. Born in 1924, died in 2016. She died November 19th. Died November 19th, which was, that's for some strange reason, the same day that my van is insured. Same date as the insurance of my van. The renewal of the insurance for my van. But she was a very, very special woman, a very important woman to me, a very beautiful woman. Beautiful spirit as well, a very beautiful person. May we go to Isaiah now and read that. Is it long? We're not at 31, we're at 11. Isaiah 11 in that book. Right, this is Isaiah. We're running out of time here. "There must go forth a twig out of the stump of Jesse, and out of his roots a sprout will be fruitful. And upon him the spirit of Jehovah must settle down, the spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the spirit of counsel and of mightiness, the spirit of knowledge and the fear of Jehovah. And there will be enjoyment by him in the fear of Jehovah. And he will not judge by any mere appearance to his eyes, nor reprove simply according to the thing heard by his ears. And with righteousness he must judge the lowly ones, and with uprightness he must give reproof in behalf of the meek ones of the earth. And he must strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the spirit of his lips he will put the wicked one to death. And righteousness must prove to be the belt of his hips, and faithfulness the belt of his loins. And the wolf will actually reside for a while with the male lamb, and with the kid the leopard itself will lie down, and the calf and the maned young lion, and the well-fed animal all together, and a mere little boy will be leader over them. And the cow and the bear themselves will feed together, their young ones will lie down, and even the lion will eat straw just like the bull. And the sucking child will certainly play upon the hole of the cobra and upon the light aperture of a poisonous snake. Will a weaned child actually put his own hand? They will not do any harm or cause any ruin in all my holy mountain, because the earth will certainly be filled with the knowledge of Jehovah as the waters are covering the very sea. And it must occur in that day that there will be the root of Jesse that will be standing up as a signal for the peoples. To him even the nations will turn inquiringly, and his resting place must become glorious. And it must occur in that day that Jehovah will again offer his hand a second time to acquire the remnant of his people who will remain over from Assyria and from Egypt and from Pathros and from Cush and from Elam and from Shinar and from Hamath and from the islands of the sea. And he will certainly raise up a signal for the nations and gather the dispersed ones of Israel and the scattered ones of Judah. He will collect together from the four extremities of the earth. And the jealousy of Ephraim must depart, and even those showing hostility to Judah will be cut off. Ephraim itself will not be jealous of Judah, nor will Judah show hostility toward Ephraim. And they must fly at the shoulder of the Philistines to the west. Together they will plunder the sons of the east. Edom and Moab will be those upon whom they will thrust out their hand, and the sons of Ammon will be their subjects. And Jehovah will certainly cut off the tongue of the Egyptian sea and wave his hand at the river in the glow of his spirit. That's the Euphrates River, by the way. And he will strike it in its seven torrents, and he will actually cause people to walk in their sandals. And there must come to be a highway out of Assyria for the remnant of his people who will remain over, just as there came to be one for Israel in the day of his coming up out of the land of Egypt. Isaiah 11. This is November 1st, and we're doing Isaiah 11. Now we have interesting there, some interesting statements. They would fly at the shoulder of the Philistines to the west. Together they will plunder the sons of the east. That's not clear whether they're actually going to be with the Philistines or they're going to just be going in that part of the, in that geographical location, perhaps. Perhaps is where they're going to be doing that. Which is, it says they will plunder the sons of the east. Now this is written in the days of Isaiah. He was talking about Israel in his day, whether he could see as far as our day, we don't know that. We don't know that. But it's a prophecy that I know the Watchtower Society used to believe in multiple fulfillments of prophecy, where type and anti-type, there was a greater fulfillment, and they don't emphasize or believe that as much now, or they haven't in recent years as believe that as much. So we may or may not see a fulfilling of this prophecy in the modern day, is the point I'm trying to get to here. I don't know whether this applies. I've never thought of it in the modern day at all. But these are not literal things. When we talk about warfare, there's no need for anything in the Bible to be literal. When it talks about warfare, it could be talking about spiritual. It is. We know it is. It talks about spiritual warfare. We don't fight physically against people in the physical world. We fight in the spiritual world against the spiritual the devil and the false angels, the spiritual forces that are wicked. The wicked forces, we fight against those. That's where our armies are located, is in the spiritual realms. So we want to be thinking of this not in the literal sense, but it's still, we need to be aware that somebody reading this could take it literally, but they shouldn't be taking it literally. But there was the root of Jesse in verse 10 that will be standing up as a signal for the peoples. And in the meantime, there was going to be a peace, a time of peace. As the convention this year talked about, there's going to be a time of peace where the wolf will reside with the male lamb, and the kid with the leopard, the calf with the lion, and a little boy would lead them. That's a very touching beautiful image. But the one that would stand up, there will be enjoyment in verse 3. By him in the fear of Jehovah, and he will not judge by any mere appearance to his eyes, nor according to the thing heard by his ears. So he would not judge by outward appearances, right? But with righteousness in verse 4. And he was to be a twig from the stump of Jesse, and that's what Jesus was, from the house of David, and David was the son of Jesse. And the stump, in the sense that the Israelite kings were cut off, and in 609, the king died. The Israel's king was killed, and a vassal king was put in place. In 608, we could imagine that was the beginning of the, or that would be the official first year of that vassal king. So that was the start of the times of the Gentiles. As I've discussed in my articles prior to this, Bible, let's go back again. Let's go on, because we're running out of time here. We're very, very much running out of time in today's study, and I want to get through everything today, because we'll probably have more time to discuss it later if we need to. This is John 11. Is it long? Oh, it's a long one. Quite long. 57 verses. Yes, so we need to start now, and we might just barely get through it. Now, there was a certain man sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of the village of Mary and Martha, her sister. Let's start again. Now there was a certain man sick, Lazarus of Bethany, of the village of Mary and of Martha, her sister. It was in fact the Mary that had greased the Lord, or that greased the Lord with perfumed oil and wiped his feet dry with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. That Mary. Therefore his sisters dispatched word to him, saying, Lord, see, the one for whom you have affection is sick. But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This sickness is not with death as its object, but it is for the glory of God, in order that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. However, when he heard that he was sick, then he actually remained 2 days in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go into Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, just lately the Judeans were seeking to stone you. And are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "There are 12 hours of daylight, are there not? If anyone walks in daylight, he does not bump against anything, because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he bumps against something, because the light is not in him." He said these things, and after this he said to them, "Lazarus, our friend, has gone to rest, but I am journeying there to awaken him from sleep." Therefore the disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has gone to rest, he will get well." Jesus had spoken, however, about his death, but they imagined he was speaking about taking rest in sleep. At that time, therefore, Jesus said to them outspokenly, "Lazarus has died, and I rejoice on your account that I was not there, in order for you to believe, but let us go to him." Therefore Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." Consequently, when Jesus arrived, he found he had already been 4 days in the memorial tomb. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem at a distance of about 2 miles. Accordingly, many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary in order to console them concerning their brother. Therefore Martha, when she heard that Jesus was coming, met him, but Mary kept sitting at home. Martha therefore said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And yet at present I know that as many things as you ask God for, God will give you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise." Martha said to him, "I know he will rise in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He that exercises faith in me, even though he dies, will come to life. And everyone that is living and exercises faith in me will never die at all. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord. I have believed that you are the Christ, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." And when she had said this, she went off and called Mary, her sister, saying secretly, "The teacher is present and is calling you." The latter, when she heard this, got up quickly and was on her way to him. Jesus had not yet, in fact, come into the village, but he was still in the place where Martha met him. Therefore the Jews that were with her in the house and that were consoling her, on seeing Mary rise quickly and go out, followed her, supposing that she was going to the memorial tomb to weep there. And so Mary, when she arrived where Jesus was and caught sight of him, fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Jesus, therefore, when he saw her weeping, and the Jews that came with her weeping, groaned in the spirit and became troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus gave way to tears. Therefore the Jews began to say, "See what affection he used to have for him." But some of them said, "Was not this man that opened the eyes of the blind man able to prevent this one from dying?" Hence Jesus, after groaning again within himself, came to the memorial tomb. It was in fact a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take the stone away." Martha, the sister of the deceased, said to him, "Lord, by now he must smell, for it is 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God?" Therefore they took the stone away. Now Jesus raised his eyes heavenward and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. True, I knew that you always hear me, but on account of the crowd standing around, I spoke in order that they might believe that you sent me forth. And when he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come on out. The man that had been dead came out with his feet and his hands bound with wrappings, and his countenance was bound about with a cloth. Jesus said to them, Loose him and let him go. Therefore many of the Jews that had come to Mary and that beheld what he did put faith in him, but some of them went off to the Pharisees and told them the things Jesus did. Consequently, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered the Sanhedrin together and began to say, What are we to do? Because this man performs many signs. If we let him alone this way, they will all put faith in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. But a certain one of them, Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, said to them, You do not know anything at all, and you do not reason out that it is to your benefit for one man to die in behalf of the people and not for the whole nation to be destroyed. This, though he did not say of his own originality, but because he was high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus was destined to die for the nation, and not for the nation only, but in order that the children of God who are scattered about he might also gather together in one. Therefore, from that day on, they took counsel to kill him. Hence, Jesus no longer walked about publicly among the Jews, but he departed from there to the country near the wilderness, into a city called Ephraim. And there he remained with the disciples. Now the Passover of the Jews was near, and many people went up out of the country to Jerusalem before the Passover, in order to cleanse themselves ceremonially. Therefore they went looking for Jesus, and they would say to one another as they stood around in the temple, What is your opinion? That he will not come to the festival at all? As it was, the chief priests and the Pharisees had given orders that if anyone got to know where he was, he should disclose it in order that they might seize him. That was John chapter 11. And did you notice there the reference to the city called Ephraim, which coincides? It may not be in the territory of Ephraim, perhaps, but it was a city called Ephraim, which coincides in name to the mention of the tribe of Ephraim in the book of Isaiah chapter 11, which we just read. And that was not deliberate on my part. It was perhaps in my subconscious mind, but I didn't know the reference to Ephraim would be found in both places, not consciously. So that's of great interest to me. This is how we learn from the Bible, is because the Word of God, or we can call it the Bible, but it's the Word of God. The Word of the Bible is alive, right? The Hebrews says that. I'm trying to remember the way it's put. If it says the Word of God's alive, I think it is. Hebrews 12, or is it Hebrews what? Hebrews 11? It's not where I thought it was. Okay, Word of God. 4 and 12. Okay, it's 4 and 12, not 12 and 4. Hebrews 4 and 12. For the Word of God is alive. The Word of God is alive and exerts power. And is sharper than any two-edged sword, and pierces even to the dividing of soul and spirit and of joints and their marrow, and is able to discern thoughts and intentions of the heart. We can read on in that, but let's go back where we were here, if we can. John 11. So Jesus resurrected Lazarus. We now have about 6 minutes left at the most to conclude our study, but this chapter more or less seemed to speak for itself. But there's one point I would make that was of interest there that I noticed, was where they said that the high priest prophesied because he was high priest. What he said is interpreted as a prophecy because he was a high priest in that year. Otherwise, if anyone else said, well, Jesus needs to die, or one man needs to die, you know, for the nation, and he was referring to Jesus, if anyone else had said that, it would mean that he was implying Jesus, you know. But if anyone else had said that, it wouldn't have been a prophecy, but he was the high priest. So it became prophetic in that sense, which is interesting that it mentions that there. It's actually, John writes this in his book in chapter 11, verse 52. That, in other words, he was saying, it was prophetic because he was talking about the Messiah, that he would die so as to gather together the children of God who were scattered about, right? He was dying for a purpose to actually, he would benefit people by dying, in other words, was what was being said there, what was being prophesied by the high priest, Caiaphas. That's important. It's important from the point of view of prophecy and from the point of view of the fulfillment of the messianic promise. That's why it's important. But the resurrection of Lazarus is a fantastic, marvelous, real miracle that happened, that was witnessed by evidently many people who had come to see where Mary was going and so on, and what they were doing. They were all grieving for Lazarus, but they didn't expect, probably didn't expect, they couldn't have expected a resurrection, surely, but that's what happened. Jesus resurrected Lazarus back to life again from the grave, even though he'd been in the grave more than 3 days. It's a stunning, shocking, magnificent event, you know, a doing. It's not something that is done without power. Jesus had power to do it. It's a remarkable thing. It's a phenomenal thing. It's a phenomenal thing, isn't it? It's a manifestation of God's glory and power that Jesus performed there. And that's not the only thing he did. That's not the only miracle he performed. That's why it's all the more believable, because there were many more things that he did. It wasn't just one thing that we could say, well, that's a typographic error. It's not that sort of thing. But there was a lot of detail given in this account, too, that we know it's not some kind of copyist mistake or something. This is something that really happened, as is quite evident from the reading from today. So, yeah, if you've got people who are harassing you or bothering you, you know, you shouldn't feel that's, you know, I remember some of us have, you know, fears or things that we have that we preferences, let's say, that we prefer to do things a certain way. And other people might advise us to do differently, but we need to be true to ourselves, and we can be true to our own feelings. And if we have fears, we can feel justified in staying true to how we feel. In other words, if we're afraid of something, we can feel it's all right to act accordingly, to act according to our fear. It was an interesting statement Jesus made. There are 12 hours of daylight. And that's why he was going up to Judea. And that was strange, it seemed a bit strange to his disciples. Why was he going up to Judea? Because they were trying to kill him in Judea. And this idea of walking in the night. Yeah, you don't want to walk in the night. You want to stick with what you know. That's the thing. Stick with what you know, right? So this is Ward Green. It's November 1st, 2022. We did our reading as promised. We had an interesting failure of our computer, which, I mean, it's always an advantage in some way. When we have a failure, it's an opportunity to learn something that we never otherwise have an opportunity to learn. So there are some advantages to the failure, but I don't know where it's going to lead. The worst case is we never use that computer again. The best case is something far better than that, but whatever. But there are other things we can do, and there are other things in the future that we will do, probably. So hopefully we will. Let's get busy with the rest of the day now. It's November 1st, 2022, 1400 hours exactly. Ward Green saying bye for now. Have a great day. Thanks for watching. I love you and welcome.